Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Gunnar Peterson, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing in Iceland. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Gunnar a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you won't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and the email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next show is. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. If you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Gunnar Peterson about fly fishing Iceland. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for over 15 years, including Dave Whitlock, one of fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, "With my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I have ever tried. After 2.5 years testing 15 models of kickboats, I'm convinced that the Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing." Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to www.bigskyinflatables.com. That's bigskyinflatables.com. Before we introduce Gunnar, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Fly Fishers International and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Gunnar's section that says, "Click here to register for our drawing." Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a one-year subscription to the Drake magazine. And this is 4 issues, $25 a year subscription to the Drake, a really nice magazine to have, and read great stories about fly fishing. And we'll be giving that away to the person who answers the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question will be something that Gunnar and I talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer, along with your name and location, using that text box on our homepage, the same text box where you can ask questions. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll win that subscription to Drake magazine. Our guest tonight is Gunnar Peterson. Gunnar Orn Peterson was born and raised in Reykjavik, Iceland, and I'm going to destroy all these words, Gunnar, so you can correct me later. His first childhood memories are from Lake, and I actually tried to understand the pronunciation of this. Why don't you go shoot for it Gunnar? Was the lake?
Yeah, it's Lake Tinkwatlala.
Okay, there you go.
Lake
I'm not even going to try.
Yeah.
Where his parents had to drag him to bed at midnight as he wouldn't stop fishing. Since then, fishing and later fly fishing has been his passion. His guiding career started shortly after he received his driver's license, and for the first decade of the 21st century, spent the summers guiding for Atlantic salmon on the renowned Laxa, where Gunnar learned the trade of guiding and instructing beginners as well as experienced fly fishermen. Gunnar is also a lawyer and practiced law for some years after graduation. However, his passion for fly fishing led him back to the river as he became a partner in Iceland's leading trout fly fishing outfitter, Fish Partner. For the past few years, Gunnar has been guiding again and bringing fishermen to some of the finest salmon and trout fishing waters in Iceland. He is also the editor of Fish Partner News, a monthly newsletter about fly fishing in Iceland. Recently, Gunnar has shared other Icelandic anglers' growing concerns about the dangers of Atlantic salmon in Iceland is facing due to rapidly growing farm fishing industry. As a conservationist, Gunnar became a founding member of the Icelandic Fly Fishing Show, a nonprofit organization which has the objective of protecting Icelandic freshwater species, mainly Atlantic salmon, brown trout, and Arctic char. Gunnar, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's everybody, we got to thank Gunnar for staying up. It's 2 o'clock in the morning in Iceland, so we want to talk. Thank you so much for staying up and being with us tonight. So glad to have
you. Yeah, no problem. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've got some questions tonight, and let's just start out, you know, tell us a little bit about Iceland, you know, about its, you know, for all of us that haven't been there, you know, what's the geography like, the scenery like, what's the attraction that Iceland has to, well, to fly fishers as well as non-fly fishers?
Yeah, I mean, Iceland is a beautiful place. It's an island in the middle of the Atlantic, actually located on the mid-Atlantic ridge, and because of that, it's on the edges of the two tectonic plates. So theoretically, geologically, it's both in North America and Europe, and it's an island that's ever growing. It has the mid-Atlantic ridge going right through it, so it's an area of constant volcanic and earthquake activity. So that's why the center of the island has the most volcanic activity, and what we call the highlands, which is the newest, as we can say, the newest part of the country, because it's always growing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Iceland is it's a very wild country. We have a lot of space here. It's 103,000 square kilometers. So it's only 330,000 people. So as you can see from those numbers, we have a lot of space for everyone, and the nature is wild. And most of the fishing takes place on private waters, which is very exclusive, and you have your own piece of water. So that's one of the good things about fishing in Iceland.
It looks, I have your brochure in front of you that I got from you at the fly fishing show in Denver where we met, and the scenery is just incredible. I mean, it's almost like you're on another planet there, it seems like. It's so beautiful. So even if you aren't catching any fish, it looks like a good time there, looking 360 degrees around where you're at. Just about no matter where you're at. So, so when you come to Iceland, you fly into Reykjavik. Is that the main airport?
Yes, the main airport is in Keflavik, but only 40 minutes from Reykjavik, the capital. So, when you go to the fishing areas, you always pass through Reykjavik.
Okay. And when people fly into fish, where do you stay? Do you stay in Reykjavik or?
We do day tours from Reykjavik. So if people are in Iceland for other, you know, just for other regular tourist travel, then we can do day tours from Reykjavik. But when, you know, for our longer trips, we stay at the location. We stay at the rivers. We don't have lodges ourselves, but we are in cooperation with hotels, and then we have private huts also, which we rent out. So we have several different types of accommodation available, just depending on where you're fishing at the time.
And so how do you transfer via buses or shuttles to those locations from the airport then?
Yeah, we take people there. Yeah, we take people there. Most of our trips are guided, where you have a private guide, and then you just share the guide with maybe one other person. And the guide will take you to the river, you know, on your own private car. So that's how we do it.
And how far away from Reykjavik is the fishing? What kind of?
We have fishing all over Iceland. The closest one to Reykjavik is only half an hour from Reykjavik, and then the big lake Þingvallavatn, which we might talk about later, that's only 40 minutes from Reykjavik. Then we're fishing in the northeast, which is a 6 hours drive. So we have about 10 fisheries in Iceland, and they are located, you know, all over the country. So we have plenty of options for people that are traveling around, or if you just want to fish close to Reykjavik, then that's an option.
So is it getting to these fishing locations is all by ground transportation? You don't fly in like you would in Alaska or Canada, that kind of thing?
So it's mainly all by ground transportation. Sometimes we do fly up north to Big Laxaw and the northeast part of the country. It takes 6 to 8 hours to drive there, but you know, if people prefer to fly, it's easier, only 45-minute flight.
Mm-hmm.
So we do both, but most of the fishing in the south and the western part of the country, we just drive there.
So it's very close. All the rivers and lakes are very close to roads, it sounds like.
Yeah. We don't have any. Of course, in Iceland, we do have lakes and the rivers that are just in the wilderness and in the highlands, which are, you know, inaccessible, but by roads. But most of our rivers, you can drive either just right to the river or even along the river. On a, I wouldn't maybe call it a road, but on a mud track at least. And so you would need the 4-wheel drive vehicle to go along the river.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Greg in New York City was asking to have a good experience, and again, I can't pronounce it, but that lake thing of Alton.
Yeah.
How many days should one book for a trip like that? I know you have a lot of different trips that you have put together, packaged, but is there a standard trip you have for that lake?
Very commonly, people go there for 5 days. It's also a common trip to maybe to go there for 2 or 3 days and combine it with what we call the highlands and do maybe 2 or 3 days in the lake and 3 or 4 days in the highlands. But to get a good experience in Thingvallavatn, it's a kind of a difficult question because it's the fishing there is more about the quality than the quantity. I mean, the brown trout in Lake Thingvallavatn, it's not like one of those 10,000 cast fish, but you can have maybe a streak of days, 2-3 days, where nothing is happening, especially in bad conditions like the wind is blowing. But then you can have a day where you can catch, you know, 20, 30 fish. So I would say if you go on the prime time in May or early June and you spend 5 days there, you would be very unlucky if you would have, you know, bad fishing throughout the whole 5 days. Very unlucky. But a good day would be, you know, a good day there would be 3-5 fish.
Mm-hmm.
About that.
And you're talking about large fish in that lake, right?
Yeah, the average size of the what we call the Ice Age brown trout, which is only found in this one lake. It's called the Ice Age brown trout because it was landlocked there on the Ice Age. The average size in the lake and what in our beach is probably around 8 pounds now. So if you're there for some time and let's say you get some good fishing, you're very likely to catch a fish over and around 20 pounds.
All right.
So that's pretty big fish.
Yeah. The picture in your brochure for that lake is just incredible. it's just a monster brown trout. Yeah, just beautiful fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the brown
probably one of the biggest browns in the world.
It's probably what?
One of the biggest brown trout in the world, which you can find in this lake.
Yeah. Interesting and unique. Yeah. Unique species to that lake, you said. So that's great.
Yeah.
So brown trout are the primary species of trout that you fish for in Iceland. We have
three species in Iceland. We have the brown trout.
Right.
Which can either be landlocked or like native brown trout or sea run brown trout.
Okay.
The sea trout. And then we have Arctic char. It's the same with the Arctic char. They can be either just native landlocked or sea run. And then we have the Atlantic salmon.
Okay.
Our company, we're more focused on the brown trout than the Arctic char fishing. But historically, going to Iceland to fish for the Atlantic salmon has been a big thing, and it's really popular. We also have salmon fishing. So these three species are what we have in Iceland and what we fish for.
Doug up in Calgary, Alberta, Doug McLean asked about what are the seasons for trout, salmon, and char?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the season in Iceland starts in April, beginning of April, so it's only less than a month away. Before that, you don't have any fishing. So in April, you start for trout. stuff for Arpichar and brown trout, mainly in lakes. And then as the season goes, the trout season gets stronger. It's really good in May, both for char and brown trout. And then the Atlantic salmon starts to run in June and starts to run really strong in late June and the beginning of July. So if I would say prime time for any of the species, prime time for Atlantic salmon is from middle of July throughout the first week of August. That's the prime time. Prime time for fishing the big lake, which I've been talking about, that's May. And prime time for just general for char and brown trout in Iceland is June, July, and even into August.
Okay.
That's pretty much the season in Iceland. And then September, you can have really good fishing in September as well for autumn salmon and also for trout.
Is that
the summer?
Does the weather get kind of dicey though in September? Is that more likely that you'll have?
Yeah, I mean it's Iceland, so May, out in May and September, you can get unlucky. Definitely, you can get unlucky. It's dodgy, but you can get good weather also. But if you want to be more on the safe side regarding the weather, then from middle of June, July, August, that's a better bet.
Okay, and then David in Fort Collins, Colorado, was asking the best month. So it sounds like probably July is one of the best months. Is that true?
Yeah, June and July, okay. I would say generally for trout, from last half of June and July, that's probably the best month. And for Atlantic salmon, slightly later.
Okay. So you can take a trip and be fishing for both brown and Atlantic salmon in the same trip. Sounds like that's
definitely. Yeah.
Your grand slam, I take it, is a brown, a char, and an Atlantic salmon, right?
Yep.
Okay, yep. Good. So you're fishing rivers and lakes there. Now, on the rivers, are you primarily doing wade fishing or are you doing float fishing? Drift boats, rafts?
Wade fishing only.
Say what again?
There are wade fishing only.
From the bank, okay.
Or wading. Yeah. I mean, we do have boats in one river in Iceland, which we call Big Laxa, but they're mainly just for, they are for fishing in some places, but that's one of the only rivers in Iceland that we do fish from boats. So it's mostly all wade fishing and from the bank.
Okay. And then, well, lake fishing is wade fishing too, or is that from a boat?
In our lake, it's from the bank and wade fishing. We're not permitted to take a boat out there. But there are some lakes in Iceland where you are permitted to fish with a boat.
Okay. Let's take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about fishing in Iceland. Baja Fly Fishing Company is dedicated to fulfilling your vacation dreams, and just so you know, there's no mistake, they derive as much pleasure from helping a novice improve as they do fishing with a pro. From the casual to the hardcore, they can match your expectations with their experience and coaching. A vacation with Baja Fly Fishing is more than a fishing trip. It's a full-on Baja experience that you will remember forever. They know the Baja after 40 years of traveling its back roads, kayaking its shoreline, surfing and snorkeling while pioneering the fly fishing techniques that have evolved into the tactics used today. They're well-versed in fly fishing the beach, in kayaks, on pangas, and are well-versed in all tackle types. Join them in pursuit of roosterfish, dorado, marlin, sailfish, wahoo, jack crevalle, yellowfin, skipjack, and many other species. Learn more about Baja Fly Fishing Company by visiting their website. It's bajaflyfish.com. bajaflyfish.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Gunnar Peterson about fly fishing in Iceland. If you'd like to ask Gunnar a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And, okay, good. All right, I'm just checking some of the questions, Gunnar, that are coming in.
All right.
Okay. Okay, good. We've got one, but it will fit it in later when we start talking about presentation techniques like that. So we're good for the moment.
Yep.
Okay, the question from Doug McLean in Alberta, Canada again is, are there public waters that can be fished for trout, salmon, and char, or is it all private?
It's all private in Iceland. It's even, to understand the system, it's good to know that, you know, even though there's some land in Iceland that is owned by the government or owned by the municipalities, there are still someone that controls the fishing licenses and owns the fishing rights. So all water in Iceland is, in that sense, private, and you have to buy the license from the landowner or someone who leases the river from the landowner to be able to fish there. That's how the system works. And then most commonly, the landowner, the farmer, or the one who owns the land, leases the fishing rights out to someone like Fish Partner, for example, or Guide Service, or whoever, you know, wants to operate it. So that's usually how it is done. But in theory, you could go up to the next farm, and if that farmer had to rent out his lake or river, you could just buy a license from him. That's how it works.
Okay, so Doug also asked a question about license fees for non-residents to fish. So each, and you call them beats there, right? Kind of beats?
Yeah.
Fishing areas?
Beats, yeah.
So you don't buy a Icelandic fishing license per se. You buy a license to fish each individual piece of water. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
okay.
And you don't need any license from the government or from the state or anything. You just buy from the landowner or the outfit that has leased the river from the landowner.
So is it, because we did have a couple of CJ in Coventry, Connecticut. He asks, can I plan a fly fishing trip as a do-it-yourselfer? This is without a guide, and what percentage of the rivers are open to the public and not private land? Well, you already answered that part. But could a person do a do-it-yourself trip and buy their own licenses, or is that just really not feasible?
Yeah.
They can. Okay. Okay.
That's actually no problem. And for example, our services are, we do tailor all the packages. So we do anything from just supplying you with license up to, you know, the whole package with guide and, you know, the accommodation and everything. So if you would just like to buy the license, we can sell it to you. Of course, we usually, you know, recommend people having a guide for at least 1 or 2 days to get to know the place.
Sure.
You could do it on your own. That's common. And people, there's even a specific card or a license card which you can buy, which gives you access to, I think it's probably 35 or 40 lakes all over Iceland. That's a cheap card. It's only lakes, though. It's $60 or $70. So you could, you know, use that and just, you know, drive between those lakes and fish. And so you can do it on your own. That's no problem.
Do you buy your licenses by the day or by the week, or how does that work? Or is it different for each?
It's by the day. You buy it by the day, and obviously then we sell the package beforehand, and we sell you, you know, several days. But you buy it by the day. And it's very common in Iceland, especially in the salmon fishing. It's more common actually to, in the trout fishing, that you buy whole days, you know, start in the morning and just finish in the evening. But it's very common in the salmon fishing that you start, you buy on whole day, but the whole day is not, it's the afternoon of the first day and then the morning of the second day.
Oh, interesting.
So that's how it's sold. And in salmon fishing, it's usually sold in, at the minimum of 2 days or 3 days, but depends on where you're fishing and, you know, who you're dealing with.
Well, it sounds like, you know, working with a company like yours, you know, you can sort out all those opportunities for people to, you know, where to go, you know, where to get the license, and probably save a lot of time, even if they don't want a guide. Your services are going to come in handy for sure. Especially in a country that you haven't been to before, it's just getting around and knowing where to go is probably half the battle. And like reading your brochure and stuff, I got the impression that when you buy a license for some of these areas, they are restricting the number of people that are in that area, right? So you're not fishing shoulder to shoulder. Or,
yeah.
You want to talk about
it's
that a little
always,
bit?
Always. Yeah, it's always limited number of people. I mean, there are some lakes probably that you wouldn't have limitations, but usually, I mean, there are only, you know, few people fishing there anyway. But all the main rivers, all the salmon rivers, and all our beach in the big lake, Tinkvatlava, have a limitation of a number of rods that can be fishing at a time. So, for example, we have rivers in the highlands, and we the two rivers there, and the total length of those rivers are 25, 30 miles, and there are only 8 people fishing at a time. So you always have a certain section of the river, you know, for yourself.
Wow.
That's how it works with most of all of the fishing.
Now, do they do any stocking in Iceland, or is this all wild trout, and I, of course, wild salmon? But
yeah, it's all wild trout and wild salmon. And there are a couple of rivers in Iceland which they, you know, restock the smolts, and they are, in that sense, a hatchery fishery. There's only a couple of salmon rivers that do that. But apart from that, everything is it's all wild.
Yeah, cool. And then Dave in Mesa, Colorado, wants to know, he says, I've heard that Iceland is very expensive to fish. I've been to Iceland many times and understand the cost of most things in Iceland. Setting aside airfare, lodging, food, and ground transportation, he wants to know what a week of fishing costs for a non-resident with a guide. So can you come out with kind of an average of what it costs to fish? Excluding the ground all those lodging, ground transportation, hire a guide?
Hire a guide. If you hire a guide, then buy the license. The license is the first cost that you have to buy, and then the guide. The guide usually can be shared between 2 and 3 people, and it's most often more pricey than the license itself. So it could be about $1,000 per day for the license and the guide. So if you split that between 2 persons, there will be 2 licenses and 1 guide, and that would be about $500 per day.
Okay.
I would say from there and up. And if you would do, for example, a trip with everything included, like the accommodation and transportation and just the hotels and everything, it's usually ranging. In trout fishing, it's ranging around $800-$1,000 a day per person. But at salmon fishing, it's more expensive. And that's all inclusive package. But what Dave is probably talking about and referring to is salmon fishing also, because salmon fishing is usually more expensive than trout fishing. And that's how it's always been. And the license to fish for one rod for salmon, I mean, in the prime time, it's usually maybe $1,500 a day for the day for the license. So, and it can go up from there, believe me. It can be twice that expensive. So it's, I would say, anything from $500 to $1,000 for the trout fishing would be the price.
Dependent on where you're fishing and what you're fishing for determines the price, right?
Yeah. And what you're fishing for, and the season, you know, whether you're in the high season or not, whether you're in the main salmon run of that river or not. So the prices on the licenses in the salmon rivers, for example, they vary a lot if you're in the shoulder season or if you're in the high season. So that's what affects the price the most.
Yeah, varies quite a bit. Now, Larry, Salt Lake City, wrote in and he said, to stop the transfer of pathogens and disgusting insects to our other trout streams in the world, I'd prefer to rent a complete fly fishing outfit, waders, rod, reel, vest, line, leader, everything. Is that possible? Can you gear somebody up there?
Yeah, we can do that. I mean, we do that ourselves. We can rent you rods, reels, flies, waders, everything. Do it for $50 a day, around that. Everything included, but you do it in the fly shop also if you're doing it on your own, and you can rent the gear. But what you do in Iceland, though, it's not permitted to bring in any used gear or tackle without having it disinfected in the airport. So when you come here, you go to the custom gates at the airport and declare the fishing gear, and they will disinfect it there. At the airport. So that's what we do to keep the rivers clean. And away from, you know,
And they do that for you.
They do it for you. You have to pay a fee. It's not very expensive. You have to pay a fee. I think it's around $30-$40.
And how do they do that? Do they have a chamber or something? Or how do they actually?
Yeah, they take it back. Take it back to a room. I've actually not seen it done with my own eyes because it's done behind locked doors. But there, they have a solution where they, you know, spray the gear and the waders and the shoes and everything, and disinfect it in that way.
Rods, reels, flies, all that.
Yeah.
Anything
we always recommend that people don't. We recommend that people don't bring used flies then anyway. And
okay.
Not felt soles on the waders, but they don't do anything about that. But we recommend that you don't bring that.
Okay. Before we get into more specifics about the fly fishing there, Larry in Salt Lake asked another question. He says, "What's been the biggest challenge in Icelandic fly fishing in the last 30 years?"
Biggest challenge. I mean,
I think he's talking about,
I would say that,
as a fishery, you know, not as to fly fishing or maybe conservation or, you know, the whole idea of fly fishing in Iceland, I think what he's after.
Yeah. Yeah, what the biggest challenge and the biggest change in the past years has been the introduction of catch and release, I think, in the salmon fishing. And, of course, in trout fishing as well, it's growing every year. Historically, Icelanders have been fishing and hunting, you know, to feed their families. So I would say about 20, 30 years ago, we had very little catch and release amongst Icelandic anglers. It was always, you know, growing and being introduced by anglers coming from abroad, from the UK and from the US. And this has been growing a lot in Iceland, and I think it's affecting the numbers of the salmon, of the especially multi-winter, you know, the big salmon, dramatically. They are growing again, and the sizes of the salmon are, you know, coming back. And that's because we've been releasing a lot of the big salmon and the salmon in general, and now a lot of the main salmon rivers in Iceland are catch and release only. I mean, most of them, I would say. And this has just been happening over the past, let's say, 20, 15 years
mm-hmm.
or so.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like a real positive effect on the fishery.
If you're
a native Icelander, do you have any kind of an exemption for that, you know, like the farmers and so forth that are still, you know, fishing?
Not in those rivers. I mean, if you would fish those rivers which have these policies, then you just have to, you know, abide to those policies and, you know, release everything. So it depends on the rivers. I mean, there are some rivers that are open to, there's a quota maybe. You can, you know, take two fish for the day, or some don't even have quota. But, you know, the main salmon rivers all have, you know, catch and release rules at this point.
Okay, good. Okay, we'll take another quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about actual fishing and techniques and so forth in Iceland. So hang with us a few seconds longer, and we'll be right back. Looking for that shot at a permit? Whipray Key Fishing Lodge in Belize is where you want to be. When you stay at Whipray Key Fishing Lodge, you're on a private island and are only minutes away from some of the finest permit fishing in Belize. Whipray Key is just a 30-minute boat ride from Placencia. Once you're there, you'll be fishing Permit Alley, one of Belize's best fisheries, and you won't be taking long boat rides to get started. You'll fish with world-class guides like Daniel Cabral, whose family has fished the area for over 30 years. Want to switch it up and fish for tarpon and bonefish and make it a grand slam? They can make it happen at Whipray Key Fishing Lodge. Book your next adventure now. Visit WhiprayKeyFishingLodge.com. That's Whipray and then C-A-Y-E FishingLodge.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Gunnar Peterson about fly fishing in Iceland. If you'd like to ask Gunnar a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Okay, let me see where we're at here. Okay, this is kind of relates to what you were just talking about. This question came in on the internet, Gunnar. Dave Dillon says, how has fishing for the three species mentioned changed over the years? Is it improving or declining? What are the things that threaten the future health of fish populations in Iceland? So I would take it that it's improving, right? But is there anything else that's threatening the health of the fish populations in Iceland?
I would say that the Atlantic salmon is has been improving over the last 10 years or so. Before that, it had been declining a lot. What is threatening the Atlantic salmon at this point is the increased salmon farming in Iceland. That has been increasing for some amazing reason, has been increasing over the last 5 or 10 years, while it has been, you know, declining in all other countries we compare ourselves with, like Norway and the European countries and even in the U.S. So that's what is threatening the Atlantic salmon at the moment. The brown trout has always been strong and is still strong, and I think there's nothing threatening the brown trout. But the Arctic char has been having some difficulties, especially the sea run char. My theory is that it's probably because of increased temperature, because the char, you know, thrives best in the cold. Yeah, that's how it has been developing, you know, over the past, you know, decades.
I may have missed you saying this, but did you say that they're doing, are they doing salmon farming in Iceland, or is it because of the farming done elsewhere?
Yes, they're doing it in Iceland.
They're doing
and
it in Iceland,
doing it,
too.
Yeah, unfortunately. But we are trying to let our voice be heard that they don't do it in quite the numbers that they are planning to do.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to be a problem all over the world. I know I personally don't buy anything,
yes,
any frozen fish that's not wild caught. You know, that's just,
yes.
I like the idea of sustainability, but not when it starts hurting the native populations. That just doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's see. Where was I on this? Talking about, one of the questions here. Larry Ray in Salt Lake City again. He says, how crowded are the rivers in the summer? What are the main, well, we'll talk about hatches here in a minute, but basically how crowded they are in the rivers are in the summer. You want to answer that again?
Yeah, I mean, they just aren't. That's the easiest
they aren't.
Answer. Because of the, because of the limitations of the rod, you
yeah.
always have your section to fish, so. There's no race to the best spots.
Yeah. Does that ever become a problem of being able to find, you know, getting a license and a place to fish? Is that ever a problem?
Oh, yeah, that can be a problem.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously, if you come out tackling, you can always find something, but to be able to get good spots and to get into the rivers, you need to book in advance. And I mean, for example, for this coming summer, we have several options open still in the trout fishing, but if you're going for Atlantic salmon in the prime time, then it's usually best to book 1 year in advance.
Wow.
Or so.
And that's the advantage of going with a company like yours, because you probably have those locked in a certain amount every year, right? So you know what you're going to have as inventory, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about the brown trout, because that's a big big focus of fishing in Iceland. What are the natural
yeah.
foods that the brown trout are eating in Iceland? Are they any different than you'd find elsewhere in the world?
I mean, not really. They just eat all the kinds of insects and flies that we have. You know, the hatches. We have quanomites, caddis. A lot of midges and some mayflies. The big trout in the lake, which I've you know talked before, the Ice Age brown trout, they eat small char. So they eat other fish. And yeah, just mainly the these hatches which I mentioned. That's what they eat.
So the major hatches are midges and what else? You did say some mayflies.
Some mayflies, not the big hatch, but midges, carrots, and chronomites.
Chronomites, okay. And for fishing the rivers and streams, are you doing more nymph fishing, dry fly fishing, streamers? What's usually the case there?
We do all of it. I mean, for example, if I talk about our rivers in the highlands for brown trout and Arctic char, the nymphing is probably the most effective overall, method which we use. And obviously, I use the opportunity to fish dry flies every time I get. It's my favorite. So and that's, mm-hmm. that can be really strong if you have the right conditions and you have the hatch going on.
Right.
And in the cold water, and in the off season, in the early season and the late season, then streamers, get this stronger again. But usually you're just fishing with all these three, just whatever conditions are up at the moment.
Yeah. But, we're looking at the pictures, you're into some pretty large fish here, and you always wonder, well, are they taking the small midges and so forth, or do you have to use streamers to get their attention?
No, you can catch the big fish on just tiny dry flies, and tiny nymphs.
Tiny nymphs, yeah. Good.
It's incredible it's incredible how these tiny flies can hold these big fish.
Yeah. And then what about in the lake fishing? A lot of chironomid type fishing, or what techniques do you use there?
In the big lake, it's the most common thing is, you catch most of the fish on streamers. And, weighted streamers. And especially in the prime time, in the early season in May and the early June, it's mainly on streamers. But when we go into the season a little bit, we can catch them on small dry flies and on nymphs. But most of the fish in the lake are caught on streamers.
Okay. So a lot of stripping for those.
Yeah, a lot of stripping.
Doug McLean up in Calgary, you've got a lot of questions here tonight. Thanks, Doug. What are the popular flies for trout, salmon, and char? I know that covers a broad range, but maybe you could kind of list off a few of the more common ones you use.
For salmon, example, if you just want to have a good box to take over all Iceland, fishing anywhere in Iceland, you would have to bring just regular salmon flies. Some of those common patterns are Red Francis, Blue Charm, Collie Dog, Nighthawk, several of those names. Then you need some floating tubes, or small and big floating tubes like Sunray Shadows. We fish those. Collie Dogs, the big floating tubes, strip them or, have them skating across the surface. And then some tiny weighted tubes to go down a little bit in some cases. And then last but not least, the hitch. That's probably my favorite technique to fish for the Atlantic salmon. And you do the kind of the Portland knots on a single hook fly or use a special hitch tube, which creates this ripple hitch on the surface, which attracts the salmon. And the salmon just takes it on the surface.
Wow, that's exciting.
That's for the salmon. That would be a really, good salmon box. For the trout, you would have to bring what we've been talking about, the dry flies, streamers, and nymphs. We have special, of course, a lot of special nymph patterns in Iceland. Good patterns would be croaking. Not sure how that will, translate, but it's we call it the hook. That's a really good pattern. Pheasant tail, copper john.
Mm-hmm. The old standby, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah. Shock whack. Just a lot of those flies that people are familiar with in the U.S.
Doug, again, asked another question. He wants to know if you're using any tube flies with single or double hooks. allowed or refused?
It's allowed. I mean, I don't use it for trout fishing at all. Some people do though for kind of the streamer tubes. It's popular with salmon.
Yeah.
People use small micro tubes, small weighted tubes, even larger tubes, and then what I mentioned before, like the sunray shadows and those kind of tubes, which you skitter and skate across the surface.
Yeah. Okay.
And there aren't really rules about the number of hooks, so you can use trebles.
And what about in fishing for trout? Can you have three flies on? Or just two, or is there any legal, no restriction there? Okay. Whatever you can keep from tangling up.
Proper. Yeah.
You said so, go ahead. You were going to say something about dropper.
Yeah, I mean I commonly use a dropper, so I normally don't fish with three flies, but very commonly with two flies.
Right. Dry dropper or a double nymph rig down below. Something.
Yeah, both.
Both, yeah. Larry in Salt Lake City wanted to know, during the summer months, what a common attractor pattern is there?
Yeah, like for like streamer-wise?
No, I think more like grasshoppers, ants, you know, an attractor fly when there's no hatch on, more of a searching fly.
Yeah. Just a rather large caddis, I would say.
Caddis?
In that sense.
Do you have grasshoppers in Iceland?
No, we don't have grasshoppers.
Okay, yeah.
No.
So or crickets or cicadas, none of those?
No.
No? Okay, too cold, huh? I guess.
Yeah.
Those are just a lot of attractor patterns that are used in the U.S. Just like a stimulator or something that's kind of, you know, big and buggy on top. But so it sounds like you don't have a lot of surface bugs like that other than the normal kind of caddis hatches or midges.
Yeah, right? we don't have any big bugs.
No big bugs. Okay. Well, he asked, the second part of his question was, do you use more streamers than dry flies?
I would say, yeah, probably the average Icelandic trout fisherman would usually use more streamers than dry flies, and he would have more streamers in his box than dry flies. But I think the dry fly fishing is always increasing, just because people, you know, tend to just go for it every chance they get. And obviously the chance isn't always there, but, I mean, increasingly for myself, for example, I just sometimes just wait and, you know, watch the water. And I would rather catch a fish on a dry fly than a three or four fish on a streamer. So, we use both, you know, pretty much. But the general in Iceland, the streamer is probably stronger.
Yeah. The there's also some questions about equipment. If you are bringing your own rod and lines, what length of rods and weight rods should you bring, and what type of lines should you bring?
Of course, we have everything here from, you can go on a trip fishing for relatively small char or trout, like, 2-3 pound fish, and then you could be going on an Atlantic salmon trip or going into a big lake fishing for 20 pound trout. So, but if you would want to take a kit to Iceland and, you know, fish most conditions, I would say you bring a lightweight single-handed rod, 9 feet, I would say 5 or 6 weights. And you can fish pretty much, you know, all the trout you want. And then bring 7 or 8 weight for the salmon or for the big trout.
Okay.
If you have more options, I mean, I would love to go out and fish brown trout and char with a 4 weight, so I sometimes bring that with me as well. But anything from 4 to 8 weight, depending on where you're going, single-handed rods should, you know, be sufficient.
Okay.
For salmon fishing, there are some rivers that are, you know, bigger and kind of well, you don't really need a spay rod, but it can be really handy.
And fun, huh?
That's with the rods. And with the lines, I mean, the heaviest line I would use for a spay rod would be 11. But usually, I mean, you would be using lines for salmon fishing from 6 up to 9 maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, mainly floating lines, is there any need for sinking lines? Do you use sinking lines in the lake?
In the fall, intermediate, but mostly all floating. I mean, I hardly ever put on a sinking line anymore. I mean, if I do salmon fishing or sea trout fishing in the fall, when it's cold, or in the really early season, maybe April and early May, I use intermediates or sink tips. But it's common in the summer, it's not a necessity. I mean, bringing a sink tip with you, just to attach if you get in wet conditions, but floating lines are usually always just sufficient.
Anything special regarding, the terminal tackle, your leaders and tippet are all pretty standard? Anything you prefer or do different?
It's all pretty standard. I mean, what we have here in Iceland, which is slightly different from the U.S., which I've experienced. I've fished the U.S. Twice this year. It's my first time fishing abroad ever. Mm. These are just this year. The fish are not as spooky, I would say. They're not as spooky to the leader as in the U.S. So we don't really need to go, 6x or 5x for the tippet.
So
3 or 4x should usually be sufficient. And just in general, when you're standing over a fish, I found that when a fish in the States, you could be standing over a fish, for several minutes before it just slowly moved out. Here you can often, that's kind of a different point of the spookiness. They're not as leader shy here, but they're spooky to the people.
Okay.
So they often just run. And you can explode the pool just by standing over it. But so that's kind of the difference in the fish.
Okay. Do you have a lot of raptors in Iceland? Eagles, hawks?
No, we have falcons and eagles, but I wouldn't say a lot of them.
Okay, yeah. Just wondering about. So they know what the fish know what humans are. Basically, they're not thinking we're flying. I mean, they know the human form, I guess, so that's what they're reading.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take another quick break here, and then we'll come back, talk a little bit more about fishing in Iceland. Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club levels are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with restoration habits of, like, Wolf Creek in Idaho and Sands Creek in Upper Delaware in New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish and their habitats, like the peacock bass study in Miami, Florida. Fly Fishers International core values remain unchanged: to serve as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish, to preserve and promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying, and to help ensure future generations can continue to enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join the Fly Fishers International, as they would work to cultivate conservation, education, community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to their website at flyfishersinternational.org. That's flyfishersinternational.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Gunnar Peterson about fly fishing in Iceland. If you have any questions, put them in that question box on our homepage, and we'll see if we can get them answered. We do have a few that came in here, Gunnar. We talked about hatches, so we addressed that one. Dave in Mesa, Colorado, says he's visited a fly shop in downtown Reykjavik. Are there other – wants to know if there are other – fly shops throughout Iceland I'm curious that if outside Reykjavik, how hard it would be to find general fly fishing supplies.
I mean, there are other stores outside Reykjavik. I mean, most of the biggest stores are in Reykjavik. There are stores up north in Akureyri, the biggest town in the north. There are stores in the east, and I think there's a store in the town just 1 hour east of Reykjavik called Selfoss. He basically just sent me a line, and I usually do all my shopping in Reykjavik, so I know there are there. And oh yeah, of course there are stores up north in Húsavík, very close to Big Laxá, really great store called Hlad, Hlad. So
okay.
there are stores all over, but I wouldn't leave Reykjavík. I mean, you would have to drive in some places. You would have to drive considerable time to get to another store. So
the best to stock up.
I'll probably do my shopping in Reykjavík.
Yeah,
okay. it's safer at least.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I think we answered that question. And hold on here. See what else we got coming in. Okay. We answered the rods. All right. Phil asks, he says, I always hope to hear about techniques employed elsewhere that I might try on waters near me. He's in the U.S. and Kentucky. What are there any special techniques? He wants to know, are there some techniques you employ in Iceland that might be transferred well elsewhere? Anything you've seen differently done in Iceland than you saw in the U.S. as far as presentation and so forth?
It's probably more in regards to salmon fishing, which
salmon?
I've seen techniques here in Iceland that salmon fishing. But for trout, I hope I don't offend any Icelandic anglers. But I think trout fishing in the U.S. and elsewhere where I know about it, it's more technical than in Iceland.
Okay.
It's probably due at some extent to the what I mentioned before, that the fish aren't, as leaders say here, they aren't as selective, because people aren't. I mean, there aren't someone just trying to feed them fly constantly, because like I mentioned before, we have these limitation of rods, so fewer fishermen are trying to catch them.
Right.
Been, not been caught as often, so. I can't think of any specific technique that I think of that we use here that I haven't heard about elsewhere.
The pressure is less there because you've only got one fisherman in probably several hundred yards of river at the most, right? And and you're just not seeing that many people. They get pretty hammered here in the United States.
The technique we use here, which I don't know, it's used a lot abroad. It isn't my favorite, so I wouldn't probably add it to my to my arsenal if I did need to. It's heavy streamers with sinking lines. That method which is used in a cold conditions in Iceland.
Yeah.
But only delicate techniques. I think we probably picked them up from foreign anglers along the way.
Is there anything special that you would do to tell us as foreigners coming in to fish how to prepare for a fishing trip in Iceland, like gear, other clothing, equipment, other than your fly fishing gear? How should you be best prepared?
Just dress well. Just be prepared for everything. I mean, weather-wise, Iceland can be, pretty harsh. Obviously, people, fishing the North U.S. and fishing Alaska, they know this, and they have been there, in harsh conditions. But you'd need the underlayers of wool and, really good underlayers, thick socks, and all that kind of stuff. And of course, not bring a rain what do you say, rains, just bring a completely rainproof jacket. Not something that just, you know, holds rain for an hour, but just completely rainproof jacket.
Okay, I had trouble hearing you. You said bring a completely rainproof jacket. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like one of those, you know, proper rainproof jackets. Because
yeah.
When it rains, it can rain, you know, a lot and, you
yeah.
know, for a long time.
So pretty much, you know, just similar to if you were fishing in northern Canada or Alaska, you prepare pretty much the similar way, right? I mean, I don't know
yeah,
how
yeah.
much further north you are than Alaska, or if you are north or in the latitude. Do you know what latitude you are in comparison to Alaska?
Yeah, the northern part of Iceland is 66 degrees.
Oh, yeah, it
so
looks like
compare,
the dead center
yeah.
in Alaska, yeah. Just pulled up the map.
Yeah, it's about the same.
Yeah, yeah, like in the Fairbanks area of Alaska. But you probably have different weather because of all the water around you, the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have those harsh, you know, cold temperatures.
Okay.
We don't have the temperature doesn't vary a lot. We don't have, really warm days and not extremely cold either. So it's just a kind of balanced temperature. But what we do have a lot of is wind. We have
a lot of wind.
And when you have a cold day and the wind, yeah, we have a lot of winds. And, wind and the cold day can be pretty rough on the river.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. We did have one question from Greg in New York City. I don't know if you can answer this or not. He's asking about that. Lake Thingvallavatn, I can't pronounce, in comparison to Jurassic Lake in Argentina. And I don't know if you know anything about that lake in Argentina. Do you, or should we? Do you have the question?
I've heard about it. Heard about it several times before, but I don't know really, firsthand anything about the fishing, but I know there are big rainbows there. That's pretty much all I know. So in regards to techniques, I mean, he could send me an email, and I know a person that goes and fish there in the Jurassic Lake, so
oh,
he could compare
both
it
of them. Yeah.
For him.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go. We didn't really share your information. So your website is fishpartner.com, right? Fishpartner.com,
yeah.
And your email address is Gunnar, Gunnar, at fishpartner.com. So if people want to contact you, they can do that. And so, Greg, there you go. You got an invitation. Gunnar will hook you up with his friend who knows both and can probably fill you in on what it's like there. So, we're running out of time here, but I want you to kind of give us an idea, if we're, coming over there to fly fish, what a typical day might be like fly fishing with your guides and, how the day starts, how it progresses. What's a typical day like fly fishing in Iceland?
Let's say, for example, if you go to the highlands, which is my favorite part of the country to fish, where we have our Arctic char and the brown trout rivers. A typical day would be you wake up at the hotel and have breakfast. And you go out between 8 and 9 o'clock, try to be at the river at 9 o'clock. And then we fish throughout the day, and we just have... Up there, we have the lunch just on the bank. We don't go into the hotel or the lodge during the day. And then just before dinner, we come back and have lunch around 7. And then maybe sometimes, if we are in the right spirit and the weather's good, we go out again after lunch, maybe do a couple of hours of fishing. And that would be typical day in the Icelandic Highlands. And we would take the car, we'd travel up and down the river, and we'd just kind of, if the river would be like sold out, poor people would be fishing there, we would have to go into, just fish our beat and our section. If the river would just be ours to fish for the day, we could just decide, make a strategy throughout the day. We want to fish this pool and that pool and there, and just drive around and fish, different sections of the water. So that would be kind of a classic day of fishing in the highlands. For the salmon fishing, for example, that's more fixed timing of this, you go out and you have to be on the river at 7 o'clock, and you fish till 1 p.m. and you take a break during the midday and have lunch. Then you fish again from 4 in the afternoon till 10 in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you come in late June and early July, you can fish into the night in Iceland because we have this 24 hours of sunlight.
Right, right. Yeah. So it's typical to take that late afternoon break, kind of a siesta time, and regroup. Yeah, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Okay. My ideal day of fishing in Iceland, when I go out myself, is to hike a lot. I would like to walk along the river and fish. So that's an option also.
Okay. Okay. And it looks like most of the rivers are pretty large there. Is that the case? I mean, you saw some of the U.S. rivers. What would you say compared to U.S. rivers?
Now, I would say that they're probably relatively small compared to U.S. rivers. I mean, we have a few large rivers, which I would categorize as large, but most of the rivers are kind of like manageable or small. Most of the rivers. I mean, most of the rivers, you could cross them at some point and wade them rather easily. There are only probably, I would say, 10 rivers that you don't really cross.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Okay, good. Anything else you'd like to tell us that we missed or should have talked about before we close up here tonight about fishing in Iceland?
I think we just, pretty much covered it. If people would like any more information or, need any more details, just feel free to contact me. Send me an email or find information on our website.
Sure. Yeah, great. Thanks for the offer. And we'll just one more time give that out. Fishpartner.com is the website, fishpartner.com. And you can find their phone numbers and so forth there. And if you want to reach Gunnar directly, gunnar@fishpartner.com. G-U-N-N-A-R @fishpartner.com. Good, good. Well, stick with me here just a bit longer, Gunnar. We're going to give some prizes away and close this things up. So hang tight, and we'll be right back. We are going to be giving away a one-year membership to the Fly Fishers International and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. And then we'll also be giving away a one-year subscription to the Drake magazine. So hang tight, people, and we'll be right back. The Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is home to the largest runs of wild salmon on the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The Pebble Mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may also be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry is united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers from across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit SaveBristolBay.org to learn more about how you can get involved. Again, SaveBristolBay.org. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, "What did you think of the show?" Just click on that link and leave your comments. We really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes, and the winners for our drawings tonight are randomly selected from the show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show, so you don't want to miss out on our chance to get some of these great prizes we have to offer. So if you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show to provide you with information on how to receive your prize. So first, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. To learn more about Fly Fishers International, go to flyfishersinternational.org. Great organization to be part of and support, and it's international, as the name implies, so it doesn't matter what country you're in. It's a great organization to be involved with. We're also going to be giving away, so let's do that one right now, and let me fire up my database. Get us a winner here. It looks like the winner is going to be David Dillon in Oklahoma. David Dillon in Oklahoma. So congratulations, David. You just became a member of the Fly Fishers International. And next we'll give away a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which you can learn more about at mottobooks.com. And they published several periodicals on fly fishing, as well as a lot of books on fly fishing. So check them out, amatobooks.com, great publisher for our industry. And let's see, Tom McInerney in Colorado just won yourself a subscription to that magazine. So enjoy and congratulations. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And now we're going to do our little contest here, see who can answer a question that we talked about tonight. And let's just make it a pretty easy question here. What are the three species of fish that are targeted in the sports fish in Iceland? The three species of fish. So give us a answer to that, and we'll see if we can't fix you up here with a subscription to Drake Magazine. And that's our big prize tonight. So we're waiting here, Gunnar, to see, type in an answer here, and the first one that gets it right here will win a prize. And it looks like, okay, I got Doug McLean in Calgary, Canada, trout, char, and salmon. So you got it, Doug. That's correct, right? No, that's the main
yep.
categories, brown trout, to be more specific.
Yep. But,
Doug, you got it, and we'll get you fixed up with a subscription to the Drake Magazine. And you'll need to send me your address, Doug, city, state, zip, email. Well, I've got your email address here, so I just need your full address, and we'll get you hooked up for the Drake Magazine. So enjoy. Great magazine to be involved with. So Gunnar, hey, thanks for staying up so late and sticking it out with you with us.
Thank you for having
really
me.
Really appreciate it. Yeah, yeah, and thanks for joining us. Learned a lot about Iceland that I didn't know about, and thanks for being here tonight or in the morning.
Okay, thank you. It was fun.
And hopefully you've all found our archive on the website. If you haven't, there's a couple of links on it on our homepage at the bottom of every page. In the archive, you'll find all our past shows, over 275 shows we've done. You can search by keyword or keyword phrase like trout, tarpon, Iceland now, and Madison River, things like that, and you'll get all kinds of shows we've done. So go ahead and explore it, and you'll be pleasantly surprised at all that you'll discover there in the way of education on fly fishing. And our next broadcast will be on March 21st, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern time. On that show, we'll interview Steve Schweitzer. And Steve's been on our show several times before. And this topic of the show will be on poppers, sliders, and divers. Steve will dive deep into tying and fishing some of the most exciting flies to fish on the top water. And so listen in and learn the secrets on designing and fishing poppers, sliders, and divers. We'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Amato Books, Whipray Key Fishing Lodge, Watermaster, and Baja Fly Fishing Company for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.